We'll call the Legacy and Budget Stabilization Advisory Board to order. Clerk will take the roll.
Senators, Klein?
Here.
Nelson? Representatives Kempinick?
Here.
Kreit?
Here.
Citizen members, Fong?
Here.
Hardmire?
It's not even official yet.
Hardmire, Sharp?
Here.
Mr. Chairman, you have a quorum.
Okay, considerations of the minutes of the April 25th meeting.
Mr. Chairman, I move approval of the minutes.
Okay. Okay, it's been moved and approved. We need to take the roll on that.
Voice vote.
Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All against, nay. Okay. Motion approved. Okay, now we get to the 905 one. Yeah, we're moving right along. With selection of chairman. Yeah, because we added another different member, and we'll probably have to do it again when...
Mr. Chairman, I guess just for the sake of the committee, could you just walk us through really quick why we have to select a chairman again?
Well, I think there's some confusion with the council here earlier on what the legacy fund, how chairmans are selected and stuff on it, because it's the board, the advisory board that has to. And we changed the member. Senator Nelson replaced Senator Dawson Rock and stuff on it. So I thought it'd be, you know, probably prudent if we do it again here. I guess if it's up to the advisory board, or, you know, the committee, I guess, of what they want to do, but that's what I think would be, so that we have a clear understanding of where we sat with this and stuff on it. But the law says, you know, the way the bill was written here a couple of years ago about this advisory board is the board chose the chairman. You know, it isn't council that chooses the chairman and stuff on it. So it was just the thought process. And I don't know if somebody else wants to jump in too, Alan, Sheila. That's kind of my understanding.
Right, that was correct, Mr. Chairman, with the new interim process for legislative appointments. Senator Nelson was added, and the thought was from legislative management that we just include that on the agenda just to, so the committee could consider if they want to have a change or...
Yeah, we don't have to. It's just that it's just something that I thought we should talk about.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess I am going to be, you know, leaving here soon. This will be my last meeting, and I assume that you probably are still interested in being chairman. And so if that is the wishes of the committee, I would nominate, or if we don't need to make the decision, Al, can we just say we're comfortable with the current chair and move on?
Right, yeah, because President Kempinick is the chairman based on your last action, so if there's no motion, he would just continue to be chairman. And Senator Klein, vice chairman, I believe is what you passed at your previous meeting.
Okay. Beth.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question. So when Corey leaves and we have a different tax commissioner, do we need to go through that decision process again of whether we need to elect a new chairman?
Well, that's... Yeah, go ahead,
Mr. Chairman, I think the reason was because of the legislative management appointments. There could have been additional, or I mean, really all the legislative members could have changed. But I guess it's really up to the committee each time whether there should be consideration, Chairman, or not.
Yeah, because the committee, this is kind of a, it is a little different than a functioning interim. This isn't an interim committee, I guess, and that's what, I think there was a little bit of confusion, you know, for interim appointees and stuff like that. And I think that was one thing that, because the way this is kind of an autonomous committee from the legislature too and stuff on it. And I think there was a little confusion, and so I thought we should talk about the, you know, get so we understand kind of this process a little bit and stuff on it. So that was kind of the idea behind it, so. Well, if that's, everybody's comfortable with that, I guess we'll just leave that as it is then, it is. I guess we can go to the 9-10 agenda, and that's basically why we're here today, is to just kind of get an update on the, where the fund balance is and, you know, and just kind of where we're at as far as the allocations that we set in April. And then I guess we'll start with the legacy fund, and then we'll go into probably the budget stabilization fund. I'll ask probably some questions there and how we can move on that too. So Darren, if you want to take the podium, I guess.
Mr. Chairman, members of the advisory board, I'm Darren Schultz, interim CIO with the Retirement and Investment Office. I have a slide deck that I'm going to be referring to as part of the update with regards to the organization as well as the investment history and returns. Does everyone have a copy?
You have, yeah, okay. Now we need our banker.
I'd like to begin by providing an organizational update with respect to the recruitment status of the executive director and CIO position. Following that, I'll be providing a investment history and returns of the budget stabilization and legacy fund. And finally, I will provide the advisory board an update with respect to the implementation of the new policy allocation for the legacy fund. If I could turn your attention to slide 3, I have an update with regards to the hiring of a new permanent executive director and chief investment officer. A national executive search was conducted by the State Investment Board. And at the last SIB meeting on October 25th, the board offered employment to a candidate named David Hunter, who subsequently accepted the offer. And I'm happy to report that Dave Hunter will be joining the Retirement and Investment Office on December 2nd. Dave has nearly 30 years of professional industry experience, including investment banking, management, and accounting. He presently works for HSBC North America Holdings, where for the past 5 years he's been responsible for the oversight of the company's pensions, both defined benefit, defined contribution, and non-qualified plan assets with assets totaling approximately $7 billion. Prior to joining HSBC, Dave was a senior VP in structured finance with SMBC Securities and also worked at Citibank and Arthur Andersen in Chicago. Dave has a bachelor's degree in accounting from Northern Illinois University as well as an MBA from the University of Chicago. So I'm happy to provide that update to the advisory board. Moving on to slide 4. Wanted to provide the board with a summary of the contributions and withdrawals for both the Budget Stabilization Fund and the Legacy Fund. I have on slide 4 a table showing the summary of the new money going in, as well as distributions taken for the Budget Stabilization Fund. I won't walk through all of the line items. I would like to highlight the transfer that was made from the State Treasurer's Office into the Budget Stabilization Fund in August. The Retirement Investment Office received a transfer of approximately $181 million, reflecting the fiscal year-end surplus that was transferred. I would highlight the market value as of August 31st of 2013 of $583 million. Unless there are any questions, I'll proceed to the Legacy Fund.
Darren, what's the cost of running this fund? What's our basis? What's our cost on this fund?
The Budget Stabilization Fund, Mr. Chairman, is It's invested in three mandates. We have a match loan CD program with the Bank of North Dakota, in addition to two managers, Babson Capital and JP Morgan, running short-term fixed income mandates. To my knowledge, the investment management fee for JP Morgan and Babson is in the low teens. I believe it's, I'd have to get you an exact number, but it's, I believe it's 12, 13.12 or 0.13% as a percentage of assets.
Okay.
But I'll confirm that number.
Okay, yeah, if you could just email, you know, just email a kind of, because that's, it's just kind of, the budget stabilization funds one, you know, and I was just looking at our returns here, you know, that's one that we've been questioning about as far as, I've been talking to other legislators, you know, of how to use this money in some, you know, it's a stabilization fund, but the problem is that we've got a lot of issues that we've got going on, and there's been some comments and some questions of how to use some of this money, and so it's something, this one, the stabilization money is something that the legislature can either drop the percentage that you retain or increase it or do something, you know, it's a little easier to do something with, and I know we've been getting some comments from some folks that have been looking at some different angles and stuff on this, and that's why I'm just kind of curious of what it's costing us.
Mr. Chairman, that fee reflects the nature of the fund being a rainy day fund. It's as a conservative asset allocation, yep. Focuses on capital preservation, and preservation of assets, and accordingly, it's in short-term fixed income, high-quality,
yep.
Conservative asset allocation. So that fee is commensurate with the structure of, yeah. Of that pool of assets.
Well, that's, yeah, I mean, and that's what I wanted to explain, and I think the, you know, for, I think the committee members that have been sat through, the, you know, over the last 2 years here, you know, I don't know about Senator Klein and Representative Craig, you know, probably haven't heard a lot of this, though, and stuff on it, and that's more of what I wanted to, you know, that it is a stable fund, that it doesn't grow very fast and stuff on it, it's the biggest thing and stuff on it, and like I said, the dollar amounts are getting large enough now where you get other comments from other legislators about what the dollar amounts are in there, and you know, you take it, it isn't 10% of our budget, but then the other thing is, comes down to, if we do have to ever have a where we have an allotment or something where we do fall short, you know, what would be an appropriate amount in there, you know, I mean, is 10, you know, is 10% the goal, or what should a person do, and how you should move forward with it, and that's been some comments that I've had from other legislators. Senator Klein.
Mr. Chairman, so Darren, and I haven't been in a lot of meetings, just is 12 or 13%, is that kind of like a common average? I mean, I'm just looking for where, sometimes do we pay 8%, sometimes 20% on the management fees you mentioned. So I'm looking for an average, or is this about what we normally pay for fees?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Klein, this is an institutional separate account that we have,
okay.
with these managers, and these are very competitive,
okay.
Fees. You know, report the size of the mandate and the nature of how they invest, being you know, high quality, short-term fixed income. I would consider these fees.
We don't throw this in the big pot.
These are
you've got this just in this little over here.
These are separate accounts,
okay.
Budget stabilization fund, okay. Accounts that are, the client is the budget stabilization fund.
Okay.
It's not pooled.
Yeah. See, one of the things that does, you know, and we have, like I said, a short-term fixed income, you know, and what I've been reading, though, or hearing is a lot of those are costing money, you know, I mean, as far as, is that just opportunity costs of what, you know, because short-term fixed income is not the favorite child of the, that's not the flavor of the month, shall we say, and stuff right now. And that's one of the things too, is it costing us money to be doing that? Or is it just with the way, the thought process? And I know that we've had this conversation before, because it is something that's going with the assumption that it needs to be readily available if it does, if something does happen and stuff with it. But is it costing us, you know, just opportunity costs? Is it costing us with that type of allocations and stuff, when still meet the kind of the intent of what, why it's there?
Mr. Chairman, the design of the program takes into account the trying to limit the amount of what we call duration or interest rate risk, which might create some price risk by investing further out into longer duration securities, where if in the event we encounter a rising rate environment, there may be losses on capital. And the duration that we give these two managers is fairly short. We do give them flexibility to go up to 3 years duration on the overall portfolio, but it takes into account the desire to have, you know, those assets be preserved in the event that they are needed at some point in the future. And so while we're not exactly in a cash and cash equivalent, less than 1 year duration on the overall portfolio, we are taking a little bit of interest rate risk in order to get some income in the hopes of generating returns in such a very low rate environment. So that was, I believe, the premise for structuring it the way that we did it, in a short-term fixed income, and not intermediate duration, not cash and cash equivalent. It strikes a nice balance for the nature of the fund and the risk tolerance going forward.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Now we'll go to the next lecture. Continue, Darren.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move on to slide 5, which provides an update regarding the legacy fund, both the contributions and, of course, there haven't been any disbursements, given that the fund is in an accumulation phase up until 2017. The line item fiscal year 2013, you can see the contributions coming in, almost $800 million. And in the 2 months of fiscal year 2014, both July and August, the legacy fund received approximately $157 million. And at the end of August, the balance of the fund was $1.35 billion.
Okay, Darren, we haven't got September and October in here. There's 2 months out of this.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, on the following slide, move forward. I have some updated information. The previous two slides actually reflect the monthly financials that we do internally. So there is a little bit of a lag on reporting. However, I do have some updated market values as well as monthly contributions. This is a slide that shows on the left axis is the actual monthly contributions which have come into the legacy fund from both oil extraction and oil production. Additionally, this is data provided by the Treasurer's Office, and it shows, it breaks out beyond oil extraction and production, the excess dollars that were coming in as a result of the Strategic Investment and Improvements Fund and some additional transfers from the Land Department. As you can see, over the period from September of 2011 to date, the Legacy Fund contributions have continued to exceed original estimates. When we began, we were taking in deposits of approximately $35 million, and since then, we've continued to surprise on the upside. During the period from February of 2013 to July of 2013, the additional SIF dollars were coming in, and we were getting monthly deposits of approximately $79 million to $92 million. August and September, those SIF dollars went away, and we've since seen deposits in September of $76.2 million, and the state treasurer made a transfer of $78.6 million in October. The balance as of September 30 was approximately $1.44 billion.
Any questions?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. Darren, can you explain kind of the waterfall approach of how the legacy fund might again start getting transfers from the SIF fund? When does that kick in?
Mr. Hartmar, if I could ask Treasurer Schmidt to provide some details.
For the record, State Treasurer Kelly Schmidt, Mr. Hartmeyer, when the SIF fund, or the Strategic Improvement and Infrastructure Fund, reaches $300 million, that is when 25% of that then kicks back into the legacy fund. So it's another piece that comes into it. So we reset at the beginning of each biennium. So now that fund is continuing to grow, and when it hits that $300 million mark, then additional dollars will come into the legacy fund.
And the other 75% continues to go into the SIF fund?
It continues to go into the SIF, yes.
Okay, and then can you explain the transfer from the land to legacy too?
There's a portion of minerals. There's the SIF fund that we send dollars into the land department to that fund, and there's also dollars that the land department sends into the SIF as it relates to royalties. And typically it's been around about $1 million, maybe $1.3, $1.4 million that was kicking in after, once again, that $300 million mark set. So once that $300 million hits, it kind of turns the lever and additional dollars start to go into the legacy fund.
Mr. Go ahead, Chairman. Treasurer Schmidt, if you're looking at Darren's graph here, the orange represents what's coming in from oil taxes, and the yellow represents what's coming in from the land department for royalties and minerals.
Correct.
Yeah, there's a committee. There's a, well, I don't know. Did you, I got this up now here, but Treasurer sent out a nice little graph here of how all this works here and stuff on how it, and it just everything, these buckets as they fill, they just trickle into another bucket that's lower, a lower status. So that top number actually is some of the, that's really excess money. It is, you know, that the yellow portion of this is really, you're really getting down the line a ways in these buckets to get that to flow back into the legacy, because that's after everything else is all said and done. It any excess out of the SIF will go back to, will start all
after
back over again,
and then it kicks back, back. And it comes back.
Yep. Yep.
But don't get too comfortable with those buckets, because they change every biennium.
Well, no, I know. That's I had to find the updated version of them.
That was my question. Is the SIF bucket going to stay only half full, because did we spend more than we have?
The SIF bucket empties at the end of the biennium.
Correct, but we really went to the SIF bucket a lot, I thought, last year.
Yes, you did, Mr. Chairman.
And so we went to the well a lot, and are we going, is the well going to, is that aquifer going to fill back up the way it normally would, or are we really drained it down and it's going to be tougher to get?
Well, it will rebuild, and as we continue to see deposits made from oil revenue, that bucket will continue to fill.
Go ahead.
Kelly, when do you expect that contributions will again be made from the SIF fund to the legacy? When will we reach that $300 million threshold when 25% gets kicked over to the legacy fund?
Well, and Mr. Chairman, Mr. Hartmeyer, that is something probably the commissioner or Pam Sharp can. We don't do estimates in my office. We're about real numbers, so they do the forecasting, and I would turn to them.
Okay.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I would also ask Pam to maybe help respond, but we, based on our forecast, I'm sure we've got a cash flow, but I don't have that. It's something we can certainly bring back to the committee, but we know that our forecast for oil is conservative, and so we're probably going to be getting to that point where we're dumping into the SIF and hitting that $300 million threshold faster than what was that was based on our original forecast, but maybe Pam has more specifics.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have that cash flow with me either, but I can tell you that I just looked at a spreadsheet this morning that so far this biennium, we've collected about $89 million more than what was projected, so that just hastens it up that much, that fast. But
Pam, is that just the basic, that's just the increased production? Is that what there is at price and
it's price and production.
Because that, we were using fairly low numbers. I mean, truthfully, I thought we were probably, price-wise, we were probably fairly close, although I did see where some oil was at 72 here the other day, you know, and stuff on it, but the production part of it, we're past that already and stuff on it, so.
It's both.
It's both, okay. Any other questions or comments? Okay, Darren, keep, as long as you're up there before we got a break yet, I was gonna ask too, is where is what we did on, in April kicking in? Because we weren't gonna take money that was in fixed income and pull it out. We're just now going into, are we going mostly into equities now? Is where most of the money that's been since July or since we made, reallocated that? Is that where most of it's been going into to kind of balance out what the directive was? Or how does that all work? Oh, that's why you're okay.
Chair, I'll be providing an update regarding the transition plan as well as the implementation of the new policy allocation.
Okay.
In a few minutes.
Yep, go ahead.
Unless there are any further questions, I'd like to move on to the following slide, slide 7. This is a summary of performance total returns as of 9/30 for both the legacy fund and the budget stabilization fund. As you can see, the returns of both funds shown were various time periods to include since inception dates of the legacy fund of 2 years ago, as well as 8 years ago for the budget stabilization fund, reflect the conservative asset allocations of both funds. The legacy fund, since inception, has generated a return of 1.6% versus the policy benchmark of 0.411%. So we have seen some incremental return through active management for the legacy fund. In addition, the budget stabilization fund, as I mentioned, is also has a conservative asset allocation of predominantly short-term fixed income with the addition of the match loan CDs of the Bank of North Dakota. And we have seen some incremental return over the policy benchmark for the various time periods. And these are returns which our general consultant, Callan Associates, calculates with the staff reconciling.
What's the policy benchmark for the budget stabilization fund?
If you're following the benchmark, is the Barclays Capital 1 to 3 year government benchmark. It's treasury notes with maturities from 1 to 3 years. So it's consistent with the duration guidelines that we prescribed for the managers in that program. Mr. Chairman, unless there's any additional questions, I'd like to move on to the update regarding the strategic asset allocation to the legacy fund. In April, as you recall, the advisory board approved a new policy allocation for the legacy fund based on an asset allocation and spending study which was performed by R.B. Coons. That policy allocation was subsequently approved by the State Investment Board. And as you can see on this slide, the new policy allocation is going to transition from 100% short-term fixed income to a diversified policy allocation that includes 50% in global equities, which are split between 30% U.S. equities and 20% non-U.S. equities. Fixed income, a broad fixed income asset class of 35%, as well as diversified real assets of 10%, and finally, private real estate of 5%. On the following slide, I have a timeline regarding policy for the legacy fund. As I mentioned, in April, the new strategic asset allocation for the legacy fund was approved. In June, the State Investment Board approved a transition plan to fully implement the new policy allocation over a period of 18 months. The following month, an implementation plan utilizing existing managers within the insurance trust was approved by the State Investment Board. And at the end of August, the Retirement and Investment Office initiated the 18-month transition plan. I'd like to walk you in greater detail regarding developments since the advisory board met in April in particular, the actual transition plan, which was submitted for approval and was approved by the State Investment Board. On slide 10, this is basically a schematic showing the process of implementing the new policy allocation over a course of 18 months. Staff at Rio consulted with both R.B. Coons and Callan Associates to develop a timeline for implementing the new policy allocation. And I, working with Callan and R.B. Coons, looked at various time periods, 12 months, 18 months, 24 months, and ultimately concluded that 18 months was a suitable pacing for implementation of the asset allocation, given the material nature of the policy change, as well as a sensitivity to the effects of potentially negative long-term volatility among each of the targeted asset classes as we roll it out. And so the State Investment Board ultimately approved the 18-month transition plan. In the following slide, this gives you an illustration, this is slide 11, of the target allocation among the various asset classes, in which you can see that the actual pacing of achieving target allocations is, given the fact that a fixed amount of dollars, which I'll share with you in a moment, are being put to work on a growing asset base, the actual transition plan to the new asset classes will be accelerated in the early months. And ultimately, at the end of the 18 months, at the beginning of 2015, staff will have fully implemented the transition plan. I failed to actually give you the approach that we're taking with regards to funding the non-short-term fixed income asset classes on slide 10. This illustrates the plan would incorporate taking approximately $71 million each month from the short-term fixed income mandates that we have with Babson Capital and JP Morgan. In addition to those transfers, we're taking the full tax deposit that's coming in monthly, and those combined amounts, which is approximately, you know, as of late, it's been approximately $145 million a month. We're basically distributing that across all of the non-short-term fixed income managers. So this is a monthly process. And I'll get into greater detail as far as the approach that we're taking with funding the non-short-term fixed income managers in just a moment. Slide 12 illustrates the rationale behind utilizing existing managers within the insurance trust. The motivation for doing it was manifold, the first of which is the insurance pool has a managers already in place for us to implement the legacy fund transition. The accounts are open and we can promptly get asset class managers and begin the implementation plan. The other added benefit is that by pooling legacy fund with the other insurance clients, we get the benefit of lower management fees as well as lower trading costs through using existing accounts. And finally, there are numerous administrative efficiencies from utilizing existing managers, such as manager due diligence, compliance, rebalancing, accounting, cost of custody, fee invoicing, audit, and legal. So there are explicit cost savings as well as soft costs that can be avoided by utilizing existing managers. On slide 13, this is a snapshot of the September 30 market value for the legacy fund. At the end of August, the Rio office started to implement the transition plan. And for the purpose of the first month, we actually funded all of the equity managers, which are illustrated here on the graph. The table. This reflects the equity managers that we funded, starting with large cap domestic equity. You can see approximately $61.4 million was funded at the end of August, approximately $23 million was funded in domestic, small-cap domestic equity, and then finally international equity. We funded our roster of managers with approximately $58 million. At the end of September, we switched to all of the non-equity managers within the legacy fund. We funded all of the fixed income managers you can see here, as well as real estate. And what we're staff is doing is we're alternating between equity, fixed income, inflation protected asset managers in, as far as the transition plan. It allows for ease of implementation given the operational tasks required for making these monthly transfers. And the goal is to complete the transition to the new policy allocation in January of 2015. So we're just starting out the gates, and we'll continue to transition to the new policy allocation over the foreseeable months.
Any questions?
Darren, I got one, and that comes back to kind of some of the, you know, some of the history that we've had, you know, and I know the pooling aspect was always a contentious issue with, you know, on, and I understand, and that's why we kind of went long in April, you know, because that was one of the stress points and stuff on it. One of the things is that, you know, when we do the pooling, you know, there's always a concern of losses in other funds and stuff, you know, or if other, you know, it depends on how you pool, but they are the same, those funds are in the same investment as like the legacy fund. So how does that, is it just an accounting process is how you basically delineate between the two, or how, you know, say I wanted to, say the legislature decided and the people agreed and we wanted $2.5 billion at the end of the table here. How long or how hard would that be to separate that out and to get it? You know, that's just hypothetical, but I just saying what, you know, because you do get these questions like that, you know, I mean, of how, you know, how easy or how easy is it to delineate out and get it, you know, if it is requested, that's just a question.
Mr. Chairman, Legacy Fund is pooled with 14 other insurance clients, and it's really simple internal accounting. Those dollars are legacy dollars. To the manager, it's one account, one insurance account. But for our purposes, we have a solid internal accounting process which clearly delineates across all of the clients, and it's a pooling methodology that we've been doing for over 20 years. So it is a sound process, and it's really a matter of just simple accounting.
Go ahead,
Mr. Chairman. So Darren, we got $80 million in this, our share in this big pot of money. The big pot earns 5%. 5% goes to our $80 million, as long as the manager doesn't care whose money it is. He just cares about earning as much as he can. So that $80 million gets their 5% in that out. If that's us, that's the way it works.
Better Klein, the pooling is actually done on an asset class basis.
Okay.
Within the pension trust and the insurance trust. The insurance trust has a domestic equity pool, of which the legacy fund has a 30% allocation to domestic equity, or 30% for the fund, but its pro rata share of that dollar amount is its ownership of that pool. So we, the legacy fund participates in these various asset class pools and has ownership based on its pro rata allocation among all of the insurance clients which participate in the insurance trust. And the benefit for the legacy fund is that it's, you know, the manager just sees one account, but the fees are priced based on a schedule, declining schedule based on the amounts managed. And so while having all of these clients pooled together into one account, really it's a win-win for all the clients, to include the legacy fund because of the way that industry fee schedules are structured. So that's more or less how the process works. It's a ownership participation within that asset pool based upon the policy allocations that each of the clients arrive upon and which are subsequently submitted to the SIB for approval.
Any other questions? Go ahead.
I mean, what I hear you say, how I interpret that is there's strength in numbers. In other words, as we are bound together with these other funds, that actually brings strength to us. Right now, we might be helped by some of the other funds. At some point, and I think we discussed this at our last meeting when we made this decision, those funds will be aided by the fact that they're going to be a part of this fund that the legacy fund is included in. And remember that discussion, because why wouldn't we want those other funds to benefit from the legacy fund and the volume or the dollars and revenue that brings? So that's how I understand what you're saying to Senator Klein.
Commissioner Klein, that's correct. It's by aggregating these assets, it achieves a number of cost savings, both on the management fee as well as trading operational benefits from having common managers, as well as for oversight and administration. So it really is a win-win for all the clients that participate in these pools. And certainly right now, the legacy fund is approximately the same size as workforce safety and insurance, but it's will exceed the largest insurance client very soon. And but really, those legacy dollars will benefit all of the clients. It's really across the board a benefit to all the participants within the insurance trust.
Well, it's still involved in the state of North Dakota, and I guess if the state of North Dakota benefits, it really becomes immaterial of how we get there. And I sit in county commission and city commission meetings, and we have the same conversation on that level, and I think they're serving two different sets of people. Some days you kind of got to look around the room, and I think we all live in the same spot it is. So anyways, Eric, you had a question too.
Thank you, Darren. I have a question for you. When we start comparing performance, let's say in 18 months, we have all these different asset buckets. How are we as a board then to measure performance? Do we look at an overall return, or are we going to be measuring them by asset category, and then what are the comparables to those?
Mr. Hartmeyer, as far as benchmarking is concerned, we typically construct custom benchmarks which are based upon the underlying asset classes in which the clients participate. And when we eventually do get to full implementation, I envision utilizing benchmarks which are appropriate for domestic equities such as Russell 1000 and Russell 2000. International equity would be a developed market index like the MSCI EAFE. Broad fixed income would typically benchmark the Barclays aggregate, and then private real estate would be benchmarked to the NCREIF property index. And a little bit less clear is the diversified real assets bucket, because the way that RB Coons modeled it was a blend of TIPS and REITs and infrastructure. And the actual implementation of the diversified real asset bucket is something that needs to be fleshed out in the coming months. We do have a manager, Western Asset, that runs a global TIPS portfolio in the insurance pool, but we do need to look at funding other, what we could characterize as real asset type managers, such as infrastructure. Timber is often looked upon as an inflation protected asset. So that would be kind of the custom benchmark, but long term, focus would be on the success in protecting and growing the corpus over time to sustain you know, reasonable spending rate above inflation. I know the spending side of it is something that's still unclear, but the motivation for this asset allocation was a, you know, traditional asset allocation, diversified asset allocation, and it's a asset allocation which will evolve over time. But you know, there's kind of the industry standard benchmarking as well as just attaining investment objectives that I think would measure the success of how we're doing. But you know, this is an 18-month process, and it's difficult for us to, you know, typically for benchmarking purposes, we have policy allocations for each of the asset classes, but this is it's a moving target. And so we're actually just using actual weights that we're putting into these various asset classes with the public indices that are typically used to measure the benchmark for the overall fund. But typically we'll, you know, have a strategic policy weighting in domestic equity, for example, at we can measure actual the effect of allocation decisions versus manager selection. But given that this is a transition over time, it's there really is that allocation is, there's really no policy allocation since it is kind of a phased-in approach towards the overall policy allocation, which we hope to complete early 2015.
And Darren, I, one question, you and me brought that up, and one of the things, like on this 13, you know, the structured part of it, when in future, you know, when we have these different the allocations and stuff, could a person put, you know, because right now we're phasing in, we don't know what the costs are, you know, and stuff, but have it so we compare, you know, costs of what it is to manage, so, you know, what the costs are to manage those, you know, in the future. Of what, you know, when we get into deeper, because we can kind of follow them and see what kind of trends, and that way we got to kind of, you know, kind of understand what the costs are on it. And the spending part, this is going to be an interesting, I think we're, as we get closer to 17, and actually I think most everybody's agreeing now that it probably won't be spent until 19 or appropriated. It'll be spent probably, but it won't be appropriated until the 19 session. But one of the things is, and the more legislators I've been talking to is more of, I think it's, and this is going to come from the governor's office too and stuff, I'll have, but I, the more feeling I'm getting is that people are looking at more of the production part of this play, and as things start tapering off, then look at the spending. You know, there's another committee that's looking at spending it, you know, and you kind of grit your teeth because we're just getting it started, and, you know, but there is a, you know, part of that is, you know, and some of it's in the constitution of the earnings part of it, but even that was talked about, the suspending that even if it's not needed. And so it becomes a, that's been kind of a, you know, what's your goal? I you know, and that's tough on investments of what your goal is. And I think that's why we've kind of done what we did here, was to just have it something that'll grow at a respectable rate, not take a lot of risks, but also have a, you know, kind of protection. My biggest concern was the inflation part of this, or, you know, maybe now it's deflation part of it. You know, I mean, you don't know. You know, I mean, that's what's been kind of interesting on the investment side. And one of the questions I got too is the other day I heard the Feds are some of these large banks, and it gets tough when they're holding buku bucks because of their stress tests. The Feds keep upping the stress tests of these banks and stuff on it, and that gets to be a challenge too, to just try to get any type of return out of it when you got banks are playing defense on it and stuff too. But I think that's, like I said, I think the, you know, that's one thing we just have to, you know, because we know this isn't all net, you know, I mean, it's going in, we just don't want to have it where we're getting, you know, so we see what the trends are as far as expenses of these, of this fund and stuff too, is one of the things that we need to keep track of too and stuff on it, so.
Mr. Chairman, touching on the spending point you made, I think one of the important things to come out of the R.B. Coon study was the demonstration of what is a, you know, sustainable spending rate over time. The model was to look at, taking into consideration the distribution of interest and dividend income, which would occur as it's accrued over the 2017-19 biennium, but also look at beyond that spending, what is a sustainable spending rate, and 15% per biennium is very aggressive, and the way that the asset allocation was arrived at was to look at something that was modeled to provide an incremental spending, modest incremental spending above the dividend interest income, maybe 2%, maybe 3%, and this asset allocation was formed the foundation of supporting that level of spending.
Well, like committee, and you know, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Darren. Kind of continuing on, you know, with what you just talked about. You know, we've got fund managers. We pay a fee to the fund manager. Now, at some point, you know, when we start taking a distribution out of the fund, are there rear end costs on doing that too? Then, besides the management fees of this fund, that.
Representative Kreit, there are no penalties for making withdrawals. Okay. The cost would be trading that would be needed to, if needed to redeem, but our managers, you know, these are institutional accounts, and we simply send them a direction letter and say, I need X amounts on X date, and where are the funds, or the funds would be within our Northern Trust account, and it's really a very simple operational process, but there would be no penalty for withdrawal on all of these.
Now we, you know, we've got, you know, once we're had all the funds transferred into the different categories, if there was a distribution to be made, you know, in SAN 19, and I'm hoping, you know, that money is going to be around for a lot longer in 19, but you know, with the legislature, it's very tempting to to dip into that. But are we able to say that we want to take money out of small cap, or we could make that decision and go that direction, and that's how that would work then? Or
yeah, Representative Kreit, it would, you know, of course, the source of liquidity would be high in traditional asset classes like equity and fixed income, U.S. equities. It's, we can get funds in trade day plus three settlement, and the portfolio would be structured with adequate liquidity in order to meet spending determined by the legislature as needed, and it would every month we do rebalancing, and with any client within the insurance pool or pension pool for that matter, there's a process in which you know, given that the pools are aggregated, it's an internal procedure that is really, it's would be very easy to fund the spending rate that would be needed.
Thank you. Any other comments? Well, you know, this is one of the challenges I think you know, the state has as far as with this, and this, the, you know, the spending becomes the what the goal is, or what you want, you know, the problem is when you look at other state funds on resource funds and stuff, we're small, we're growing fast than a lot of them, but you look at over the length of time that some of these other states have accumulated assets and from mineral resources, we're growing, and that's one thing, you know, over the summer here, meeting different state legislatures and stuff, it's kind of interesting to, they're trying to figure out how to get to this point of where they can even start to collect some funds, you know, to put some aside from natural resource plays. And there was some comments from one state legislature that had natural resources that's kind of gone by the wayside now, you know, they still have quite a bit of it. But their problem is that become a function of their basic government, and it gets to be tough to try to set anything aside when you do that. And I think, you know, that's kind of the challenge, and that's what I think we've kind of addressed here over the last year and a half, 2 years. One of the things is what we've, you know, and that's still on my mind, is how to, you know, increase the pie, so to speak, as far as how to get people involved in it and get different, you get a lot of different scenarios. And that's what I don't want, like this committee or the investment office, any, to become complacent in how stuff. And that's, I think, the challenge is that, you know, it's kind of an automatic that we're expecting this now, and that's where I think our challenge is to not become complacent in how we deal with this. If we're just assuming this is going to happen and stuff, and I think that's what kind of the challenge is that we have. It is. Any other questions, comments? Go ahead, Darren.
Mr. Chairman, that concludes my comments. I'm happy to answer any additional questions.
Okay. Is there anybody in the audience that wants to speak or have any comments? Bruce, got anything to... Well, committee, I think this kind of, it's kind of showing where we're at here with this. I think we just needed to get together and just kind of see where we were at. I think was more of what the intent was this, and plus we got to present it to the budget section. So we had to have something, get kind of an update. But I don't know, you know, is everybody comfortable where this is headed right now? I mean, we're kind of in, my concern is the, probably, the, you know, that we track the expense of what, you know, so we understand where, what this is costing us to do, you know, because we know it isn't, and I think so we have some answers, because that's going to be one thing that'll get questioned, you know, by other legislators, will be, you know, what is this costing us, and where we're at with that aspect of it. And I think that's probably my concern is that Senator Pony?
Well, Mr. Chairman, and I guess just commenting, you know, it's certainly an exciting time when we have this sort of revenue flowing into this account, and we've now grasped some sort of foothold as to the direction we want to go. That's going to keep coming into the account, and we certainly are, I don't think we've jumped over the edge on looking for a huge return immediately, but yet it's going to take some time to build. But we're looking at 2017, 2019 before we can hopefully, even after that, before we spend it. So I think it's a great opportunity here. I think everybody's going to keep a close eye on this. You don't think anybody out there, whether they're legislators or citizens, aren't concerned about the fact that we're going to hold up our end of the bargain and keep an eye on this thing. But I think it's a great time, and by 2017, when we look back, and Darren or whoever is going to say, you know, Legacy Fund is providing this, and all these little guys down here, are down, you know, they want to be with us, and but that's our job, and I think I'm just kind of a little excited now that things are going really well. Certainly, the market is better. You know, we don't know what's going to happen out west. We certainly hope that revenue keeps coming, that we continue to enjoy the revenue from there. And other than Southwest North Dakota, agriculture isn't doing too bad either.
Well, we didn't do too bad. It's just strange.
Just more of a comment, but yeah, I think that's where we're at here. I'm at as a member of this.
No.
Folks, they're standing out there.
Mr. Chairman, when is budget session?
That's in December.
December 11th.
And you mentioned, Mr. Chairman, that there would be a report to budget section. Part of the reason you wanted to schedule this meeting today was to provide a an opportunity for the investment office to give us their latest. How does the budget section meeting take this information? Will you be presenting that? Will state investment office? How does that work?
Good question.
Well, Holly Talon, the statute requires that this board reports semi-annually to the budget section. So as we've done in the past, we as staff prepare a summary report and then the chairman presents it to the budget section.
Well, one good thing is that we, you know, it is kind of, and that's what, you look at the original pages here when we started out, and that was one of the challenges, and that's, I think, this last session, we were kind of getting questions about, and there's a lot of, the thing is, and Corey and Eric and Pam sat on this committee through the, when we first started it, and it was a challenge, you know, to try to figure out how to be safe and yet get something, and we had to do, Eric was getting a little excited about the amount of money coming in, and we had to do something, and we were feeling out the climate, so to speak, of how to go about doing this, doing stuff on it. I mean, in years past, you know, just sticking it in something and forgetting about it was probably an option. The problem is, though, is you capitalize it out, you're losing money, you know, so you might as well have spent it and got, you know, if that was the case. But the thing is that we're not bonding, we're not, you know, I mean, the buildings are getting paid for in cash, we're, you know, and so why just trying to, you know, preserve and protect for what, you know, if you aren't getting something back, that you're at least gaining a little bit of ground and stuff on it. And I think that was a challenge as to how to manage this fund. And, you know, that's one thing that has been, you look at other states and how they've gone about it, and there's different goals of what they've set these funds up. Some are dedicated amounts to certain institutions. Some, you know, I think Wyoming's kind of setting it off towards education a certain amount, and Alaska, you know, basically they write a check out. But when we met with some of the representatives from Alaska here a year and a half ago, they said if they had their choices, they wouldn't do that again because they can't build a road, you know. But and then 2 years ago, the people didn't get any checks, and this last year they got half of what they got from 3 years before that. So it gets to be, you know, when you start doing that, and we've had comments in the state here too, but, you know, we look at, and there was a comment the other day in one of the newspapers or one of the magazines that, you know, this property tax thing that we've been doing as a legislature is kind of taking some of this money and putting it back, you know, the intent of it anyways is putting it back into the people of the state, you know, whether directly or indirectly. But it, you know, that is going to get to be a challenge. I know Senator Cook, his committee is the one that's been talking more about the spending side of this, you know, and stuff on it. But it, there again, you know, I've heard from a lot of people until, you know, maybe this should have been where instead of, you know, we got amounts, but maybe we should have just had it where when it hits a dollar amount, then we start looking at spending, you know, and stuff on it, or look at, you know, because like I said, in the scheme of things, it isn't a, even in 17 and 19, you know, projecting, you know, if we double basically where we're at, we might have $6 billion, you know, we might have $7 billion, depends on, you know, oil production, it's a million something or whatever barrels a day, but could be the other way too. And that's, I think the challenge is that if we don't need it, you know, I think we should just, we've got the ability to accumulate it, and I've had people too, is why do you want to accumulate taxes, but then natural resources are something a little different than, because that's something that you aren't going to see again, so it becomes a challenge. Go ahead.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and you bring up another point, there's another committee who's been assigned to look at ideas, well, two things. The legislature's got a committee working on it, and I know there's a committee on the outside that's looking at it. Is there any information on that, Eric, or are you raising your hand?
Yeah,
go ahead.
Well, thank you. I mean, that's what I was going to mention, too, is in disclosure here, I've been asked to be on a panel. panels for starting next week. The 14th is a meeting up at Basin. To start some community discussions about how to use the legacy fund. So I chatted with the governor about this, whether he was, you know, at all interested in having me serve on there. And he said he thought it would be fine to have a representative of this group at least. So I don't have any particular, you know, philosophy on how it should be spent other than to talk about perhaps some of the numbers that Darren has shared with us. Talk about my experience in Norway and how that was, I think, helpful in looking at the fund and how we allocate it now. But I know that there is this nonprofit group that is out there now going to have community discussions on how to consider using the legacy fund.
One question, Eric, and I read through a little bit, but it was more on the investing on that Norway fund, you know, that pamphlet or that brochure or that information you brought. It was more, but how did they, it didn't really have a lot of, how long did they accumulate that until they started some of the programs that they do with it, you know, because Norway is very social orientated. I had my running mate, Dave Grovedal, went over there for a couple weeks here this summer, and he said it was interesting. You know, there's a lot of social programs that they have over there and stuff, and a lot of it's funded by their sovereign fund and stuff on it. But do you have any information, you know, of how they, you know, time frames of how they, you know, their accumulation phases and stuff like that? Because I'm just kind of curious.
Well, I could make a couple comments there, Mr. Chairman. They were back out, the group of Norwegians were back here within the last month, and I met with them. And, you know, my recollection is that, you know, the Sovereign Wealth Fund was started in the early, you know, 90s, didn't have any appreciable material additions to it until 96 was, I think, their first meeting of any material additions to it. And so today, it's well in excess of $700 billion. And as I chatted with them, they have a percentage of that wealth fund goes to what they call their general fund. And it can be up to 4%. And it's something that they look at on a periodic basis. I don't know if it's an annual, but, you know, I'm not aware that it funds any specific programs other than they say up to 4% will be allocated to fund general government.
And that's probably what it is, yeah. You know, when I say that. Yeah. I'm not saying there's
social
specifics.
Programs you may be alluding to, whether it's education or health care or whatever it is, probably was, you know, established long before that fund was ever.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, has and Alan possibly the interim committee, have they met yet to have any discussion, I don't know, on this same issue?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and Senator Klein, the Government Finance Committee has been assigned that responsibility. They met once. They're going to meet again, actually on Thursday this week. But they haven't really made any decisions yet. They're just kind of getting some background information.
Keith, if I may, I just want to know that I threw you all under the bus with me when I agreed to do the panel discussion. So I threw all you out there as potential candidates. So I took one for the team.
Okay,
Mr. Chairman, in full disclosure, I declined.
Oh.
but I believe Senator Armstrong may be the Senate member. We threw him under.
Well, at least you don't. It doesn't take you a day to drive. Anything else for the better of the order?
Mr. Chairman, Darren, based on the first item you covered today, the fact that there's going to be a new director for the office, I assume this will be the last meeting that we hear from you as the director or acting director. I just wanted to thank you for all the help that you've given us over the last you know, a couple of years, and during that time period, it's been very helpful. So thank you very much for what you've provided. You and Connie and Faye have done a great job for us, so thank you very much. And hopefully you'll still be coming to this this board, but I just wanted to thank you.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to touch on that too, is kind of get back to your services here. It's been, these transition areas are always fun to sit through. It always makes for walk out the door shaking your head, wondering if this, you wonder how we survived. But yeah, it's been a help, Darren, to do that, and hopefully it, and if this is structured the way it was in the past, you're kind of going to be kind of, it isn't really co-directors, but the way it's been in the past is one makes a suggestion and the other one pokes holes in it. So I'm assuming that's going to be your job, is to poke holes and stuff. And that's what I think we need too, is, you know, is just you come up with some, you hear a lot of stuff out across the country, and it just, you got to bring ideas to the forefront and then poke holes in it and see how it's, if it's going to work or not. So, but yeah, thank you, Darren, and I hope that everything works out, Faye. And I know Connie left, but I hope we find a replacement and stuff there that's equal caliber or better. And so, otherwise, I guess if we don't have any other comments or questions. Oh yeah, Corey, thank you for your time. It's been enjoyable. I know it's some days, I walked out of here a few times with a headache. No, it wasn't because of you, but it is when you look at these perpetual funds, you know, these are something that, you know, these, hopefully this fund is 100 years from now is more Norway's after, better. It'd be nice, but
wait 100 years?
Well, I think they got a little more resources going in than what we do. I mean, but I'm hoping that this play, the more technology changes, I think we're looking at probably another 15, 20 years out anyways, before this probably starts to fall off. And that's where I think this fund's going to come into play, is that's why I think we got to look longer term than what we actually were looking when this first got established. You know, I think my mindset was more of like the late 70s, early 80s play, where you had about a 10-year play, not even that, well, it was close to it, probably about an 8-year play, and then things petered out. And I think this here now is a little different, you know, and I think there's a lot of variables in it, but I think technology is changing quite a bit how they mine this out, and that's what it, I heard some comments in the meetings I've been going to now. This is more of a mining play than it is anything else, and so it's got a longer legs than what we've kind of assumed in the past. But you still have to be conservative on that too, because it's being out, we've seen three of them, or two, this would be the third one, but when these decide to disappear, they disappear very fast, and that's what's always concerning, is that, you know, you think it's going to last a long time. I know back in the 80s, I remember one land guy showed up in our yard and we were leasing, and he said, in 4 years he'll be out, and it'll be three times what it paid you today, and we never seen him for 15 years, so that's what gets to be, you know, that sticks with you when you actually go through it. But nobody, you know, they know where stuff is at, it's just the economics of it. So, but I think that, like I said, I think we're on the right footings, and so I think it's just a matter of keeping us informed, and we in turn keep the rest of the legislature informed, and they keep their constituents informed, I think is kind of our challenge for it. So otherwise, I guess
move to adjourn.
Got a motion? Second?
Exactly.
I guess all in favor?
Aye.
I guess we're adjourned then. I'm guessing probably be
next summer. Well, it really isn't until this gets rolled out. I mean, that's one thing about this, is you're really, because it's really not.
Keith?
What's that?
She will.